You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, the government has announced they will be borrowing money and spending, and this is a little bit of a major given they have been fairly conservative in this area, I suppose. But some people have said that even this announcement is conservative. So let's just start by saying maybe what were your first thoughts when you saw this announcement? What's the initial kind of thinking behind it?
The government is right to slightly lift its extremely tight debt goals and targets in order to borrow a tiny bit more money to spend on infrastructure. So yes, that's absolutely right. And and I can come back to the detail of that. But the second thing is that although there are a fair few projects which are ready to go, or shovel ready, as they say, i.e. got resource consent, plans are drawn up, ready to go, there is a really big question about how much actual capacity is there in the construction sector in terms of people and companies and equipment to actually go out and do much more. Mm. So I think it's good that the government didn't make a very big promise on the spending, or a bigger one than they have. And I think they're right to to take a little more time to work out how they're going to spend that money. We won't know the list of projects until early in the new year. And then we need to see how well the construction sector can respond to having more work to do. And if they pick up that challenge and get into it and start delivering good build well and efficiently, then hopefully we can start to gear up some more, because there's a huge amount of infrastructure spending that needs to be made. We've lagged very seriously, particularly since 2014, was where population increase was once again outstripping the investment that's needed for those extra people.
Mm. And I was actually going to maybe initially start by asking you, maybe if you could paint a picture of what is the situation that we're in at the moment, like in terms of where are we really lacking?
It's pretty much across the board. The basic picture is that you can measure increase in population, and then there's a notional figure for how much more infrastructure is needed for each of those people. And over the years, we've got a very variable picture over, say, the last 25 years, where sometimes that infrastructure spending has been running ahead of population growth. But more often behind, we've had some serious lags in the past, which we've not fully caught up on, and now since 2014, the spending has significantly lagged population growth, so it's exacerbated the problems we've had, and it's across the board, whether it's hospitals, schools, roads, other transport. The electricity sector is a little better off, I'd say, but there's huge spending needed in water, for example, both drinking water, storm water, and wastewater. So it is pretty much across the piece. That's why it's really important that we're getting a little bit more structure and deliberate planning around this with the Infrastructure Commission. We've had similar things in the past. This new iteration I'm more hopeful of, particularly with Alan Bollard, the former governor of the Reserve Bank, and now leading that organization. But there's no two ways about it. Huge work to do. But I keep coming back to this point, the actual capability, how much volume of building and the quality and efficiency of the building that can be done by construction companies is something that's not been worked on nearly effectively enough. There are some big pushes, both from the sector itself prior to the last election, and then since this government came into office, working with this government. And there have been some improvements. So the government is working on its contracting process, for example, so we get no more debacles like the fixed price contract on the International Convention Right. Centre in Auckland, or the Justice Precinct in Christchurch, both of which I blame the company as much as the government have caused a great deal of financial loss for Fletcher Building. So there is progress, but we've still got a lot to do to make sure we have a construction sector that's at the top of its game in terms of technology and processes and capability.
Yeah, and because, I mean, that was one of the things I was going to ask you about is the capacity of actually being able to do this. It was brought up, well, I read in the spin-off anyway, that Alex Bray mentioned, you know, like if you, immigration is one way of actually ensuring that you have the means to do this, but then the more you have that, then the more infrastructure that you're having to build to contend with that. So even if this is a sort of smaller announcement than they could have made in terms of the scale of the infrastructure, how can they actually guarantee that they are able to do it? Will they have to ensure, you know, that they have the companies ready or that sort of thing? They've made, you know, contact with the people in the construction industry before they actually announce what they're going to do?
There is an element of that, but fortunately there is good foresight on which projects are well planned and ready to go. So with this spending that's just been announced as an increase on existing spending, that looks good and set and ready to go. The a very crucial thing the construction sector has been arguing for a long time is having a very clearly identified pipeline of projects and real commitments from the government to fund and build them. So the construction sector can plan better itself as to how many people and what skills are needed and what equipment's needed to be able to do those jobs. And that the previous national government started trying to be more organized and more deliberate on that pipeline, but it still doesn't have enough solidity or predictability that the construction sector really needs to be able to invest in increasing its capacity, knowing that the work absolutely will be there. Hopefully that's a process that's going to improve now with this government.
How much of this money is going to be focused in Auckland, do you think, given that it has, I suppose, the highest need population-wise, but of course there's major needs outside of Auckland as well?
That was not a factor that was discussed in the announcement and the press briefing yesterday, as far as I can see. Mm. And the main factor was around how much of this would go on roads, it's about half of it. On transport, roads and rail,
right.
And we've yet to see the split between roads and rail. But the expectation is, this is commentary from the outside, not from the government, that we will see an increase in spending on roads. This government has been pulling back somewhat, not nearly as much as the opposition has said, on roads, but there is a good few road projects that are ready to go and are needed. That could easily be, you know, should be beneficiaries of this extra money. In terms of geography, Auckland is important, and will, just by dint of having, you know, a third of the country's population, will get quite a big share of the money. But there's also real needs elsewhere around the country. And obviously, from a practical and political point of view, the government will have an eye to spending money around the country where it's needed, but where it also knows that voters are watching carefully.
Yeah, that's. I was also going to say, yeah, is this sort of part of an election campaign lead up?
Yeah, and there was some criticism yesterday of the finance minister that he's put off the announcement of which projects until early next year.
Right.
So it can become, you know, obviously be a bit more of an election. The start of what will turn out to be a very long election season next year. There's validity in that. But I also think there's practical reasons to just take the time to make sure it's the best possible list.
This is going to happen basically very soon, I would say. What is the difference between, you know, because this is sort of one-off type spending, what's the difference with that as opposed to putting money into more operational funding, I think it was called, in terms of long-term spending?
Does that make sense? It does. The government is very clear in all its budget documents about capital expenditure versus operational expenditure, CapEx versus OpEx. And indeed, every time you spend on CapEx, you need to build in an OpEx component with it because you need to run the facility or repair the road in due course. So the two do go hand in hand. As I understand it, this is pure CapEx of get the project built. And then the the consideration about whatever the operational expenditure that might flow from that is then gets addressed in the general budget process. So, for example, if a new hospital is built, that's clearly identified CapEx. But how the District Health Board would then actually run that hospital becomes a subject for discussion with the government about its operational budget is essentially the split between the two.
Right.
But of course, this extra spending is comes on top of very substantial government CapEx anyway. So we should see it as a small increase in that substantial flow of CapEx that's already going on.
Okay. There's also been lots of chat around this growing our GDP. So is that correct, or how does that work?
It does grow GDP very directly because wages get paid, equipment gets built, materials get bought, all of that kind of stuff. And but there's interestingly not a direct correlation quite. So, for example, this $12 billion of extra CapEx, is the rough estimate is it'll increase GDP by about $10 billion. That's not an inefficiency. It's just, in essence, a lag. And those projects over time will continue to deliver GDP.
And that's obviously a positive thing, something that will contribute to helping the government repay the debt.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, because taxes get paid on that economic activity from that government revenue. The debt can be repaid. Interest costs are astonishingly low. The explanations of why inflation and interest rates are so low have never really held up to me. I still think it's odd and slightly mysterious and needs some better explanations. But that is the fact of the matter, that borrowing costs are very low. And so the government can easily do this. I'll just give you a really important benchmark. If we look at the question of how much debt as a country our government can carry, our government is one of a pretty small group of countries around the world which are AAA rated, absolute top of the ratings by the debt rating agencies. And the median gross debt, i.e. sort of middle of the range, for AAA rated countries is gross debt about 60% of GDP. In our case, our gross debt is about 30% of GDP. The difference between 30% and if we went up to 60% would be an additional $100 billion of borrowing. And the government here is only talking about $12 billion. The finance minister is still being very tight.
Mm.
He's only very slightly raised the range in which he's prepared to operate debt to a net debt target of 15 to 25% of GDP. Obviously, debt is only one of the factors that the credit rating agencies take into consideration. A very important thing to consider in New Zealand's terms, though, is that our government's finances are surprisingly variable compared with other countries because of the way our government taxes. So a large part of the government's revenue is things like GST and profit tax on companies and income tax on people, which is variable depending on the economy. So when the economy is booming, the government collects disproportionately more money. So if the economy, you know, grows by 5%, government revenues will grow by more than 5%.
Okay.
But on the negative side, when the economy contracts, then the government's tax take contracts more. So government revenues are more cyclical than in other countries that, for example, have a social security tax, you know, X per employee per year, which helps fund health and other things, which is much more stable through those economic cycles.
Okay.
So there's a very good case in New Zealand to keep government debt lower than in some other countries, because government revenues are more cyclical.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.